Welcome to the Clean Truth, where we like to call bullshit on the status quo.
What is up? Welcome back to another episode of the Clean Truth. I'm Don. I'm your host. I still fired Red. She's not on the show. I'm just kidding. I haven't fired her. We have an amazing guest on the show today. I've actually been looking forward to doing this podcast with him for a long time. It's somebody that I look up to and admire. His brand and his company is, in my opinion, in terms of culture, customer service, and being an all-around people-based business, probably one of the best on the planet. And I really, truly mean that. Bert Soren from Sornex.
Thanks, Don. I really appreciate your kind words, man. That means a lot. And thanks for being a good friend, and thanks for, you know, holding the code as well. It's been awesome to see what you guys have done over the years, and the people that you attract, and how you treat your people, not only within the business but outside of it. So kudos to you as well, but thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no problem. First, why don't we just go ahead and if you would just want to give a quick background on who you are and who Sornex is for those that don't know. I mean, I know the ones that follow me very closely, Sornex is no stranger to them, but there are people that listening that probably don't know who Sornex is.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. So Sornex is, it's a short word from Soren Exercise Equipment. My last name is Soren. My father, Richard Soren, started our business in 1980 out of our carport. Basically what we do, we specialize in strength conditioning or human performance solutions. I know we're Sornex Exercise Equipment, and that's a kind of the tangible asset of that. We sell steel weightlifting equipment, handmade here in the U.S. Always has been. We've been around for 40 years. Barbells, dumbbells, and some other parts and pieces we source all over, but the majority of it's all made in the U.S. And that's what we do. And we're kind of the chosen company for the majority of the NFL, the MLB, a lot of the colleges, athletic facilities, as far as Olympic training centers, a lot of artists, athletes. We like to say we're the go-to guys for the go-to guys. People that can't afford to lose generally choose us for their human performance needs. So that's what we do. That's kind of the day job. But what Sornex is bigger than that, in my opinion, and from our group, our core group, and I would say that you're in there as well, Don, is a little bit more of a social, I wouldn't say experiment, but how do we change the world of strength, and not only from a human performance side as bigger, faster, stronger, but to make better people and more effective people that can enjoy their lives more. So we found that if we have to sell steel rectangles that look like racks, in order to reach people and to add value to their life, then it looks like that's a pretty good deal, because we're pretty decent at both. So that's what Sornex is about. And I'm the current president of Sornex. I've been here for 20 years. I grew up in it prior to that. My father's still with us, and he's still a big part of Sornex, but he's handed the reins over, and we've transitioned in that regard. And so it's kind of where we are. I have a great staff in my stable, and we're doing some cool things. So that's what Sornex is about.
Awesome. I've always told people, you know, when they ask me about Sornex, you know, I was introduced to you guys 2 or 3 years ago through Ben Fleming and Kyle and the guys from the UNCW strength staff, who I've now hired.
Great guys. Yeah, I know. It's awesome.
Just because of the culture, you know what I mean? And I've told everybody, I'm a big brand guy, and when I find a brand and a company that sells a premium product, not the product is very important, obviously, but the mission and the vision behind the brand, when I find one and I get behind it, I'm a fan for life, and that's what I found with Sornex. And it's just the way that you guys do business and the way that you treat other people and what you guys are about and what you guys do is it's next to none. I mean, there's just no one that does it better. And you know, it's impressive to me that when I pick up the phone or I text you, Jeremy, Lily, any of those guys, I get a text right back. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, I can probably say that for a lot of people, and that's rare. You don't find that a lot.
Well, we, I appreciate that. And I guess in some ways, I'm glad that that's been your experience. And unfortunately, other ways, I kind of wish that that was, you know, that it wasn't that rare of an experience for people. But I guess that's where we are in the world. But I'm glad that it's been good for you. That's excellent. And that's what we try to hold the standard. You know, we want to make sure, you know, it's the old adage, treat people like you'd like them to be treated. But sure. I think it goes beyond that, you know. Go above that. Move people's needle, you know. Can you give them value? Can you give them excitement to want to do this whole thing? So that's kind of the goal. And if we could do that, then I think we'll do okay. You know, there won't be a whole lot of starving days if we're doing that well.
Well, you guys have set the bar, because I try to work towards that every day with Clean Eats and try to.
Oh, you're doing it. It's fun to watch. You guys are crushing it.
All right. Well, getting into what I really wanted to talk to you about, I mentioned this to you before we started the episode, was we're a little over 2 weeks into the We Change Lives Challenge. We ran this last year. It went really well, and it's going way above and beyond what we did last year. And I had Laura Berkey on a previous episode who did, you know, kind of gave some tips on how to get into a mental approach to take a journey like this. And I know 2 years ago at Summer Strong, I had the honor to sit there and listen to you give a presentation on what it took to be legendary was the name of the presentation, and living an impactful life. And I can't thank you enough. You actually forwarded me that slideshow after the presentation, and I still to this day have it. And
oh, wow.
I come across it all the time in my Google Drive files, and I'm in there every day working. So about once a month, I'll open this thing up and I'll just flip through it and read through the slides again. And I know there's some very important lessons in there. Listen, if there's one that needs to check spelling, it ain't this guy. I can't spell to save my life. But I think there's lessons in here, and it was 10 points of being a legendary human. And I think there's some of these in here that will correlate to what we're doing and kind of bring it full circle. Awesome. With taking an approach to a journey like this that I think will help them pass the journey, pass the challenge, and pass what they're doing.
If that could be helpful, that was the intent of the presentation, is to kind of define what is legendary, and you know, that's what our tagline that we use, and just kind of give some more meat to that, and then give people, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily tenets. Maybe there are tenets that I've experienced and come up with, but again, they're a frame of reference and a point of view that I've had, in order to how that manifests itself, the legendary or relevant lifestyle. And maybe, I'm sure there's people that could come up with 100 other ones or 10 different ones or anything like that, that there are no way set in stone. But those are ones that I've found that if I keep those 10, I've expanded it sometimes 12, 14, somewhere in there, but kind of those 10, if you keep up with those, I found that you could have a very impactful relationship with the world around you, and thus become relatively valuable within your community, which I think is what we all want.
Sure. Number one on that list is be authentic. And you made an emphasis to say, be a better version of you, be a better version of yourself.
Yeah, it's with social media, you get, and just the world in general, you get all these people that are icons, you know. Of course, like The Rock is like, you know, the most popular person on the planet, and he has some great attributes, but guess what? Like, I'm not The Rock, you're not The Rock, nor are we ever going to be, nor should we.
Totally.
And you could look up to anybody, that's cool, but look up to their attributes that you find could be valuable to other people, or something that you look up to. Don't look up to the person themselves, because no one's perfect. Everyone has sins. Everyone has skeletons in the closet. Everyone has things that they're not their proudest moments. So I think when you idolize that person too much, you really go down a road of almost losing who you are. So the biggest thing is to just go, okay, take a really good evaluation of who you are, and then just be a better version of that. If that's the way that you move the needle, you're always going to be in the winning category. And it's just, I think even on that presentation, it's like, hey, be you. Everyone else is already taken.
Exactly.
You know? it's pretty simple, and you know, but sometimes it has to be boiled down to something, in fact, that simple.
I think one of my favorite pictures in this entire slideshow is right here in this one, and I wish people could see this, but it's a picture of a hatchet with a wooden blade on it, and it's, the title of it is "Just because you're unique doesn't mean you're useful."
Yeah, it has a metal handle and a wooden blade. That's I think we were. Yeah, I saw that picture. I just loved it because in the strength industry, and whether it's equipment, whether it's strength coaching and or coaching in general, or just people in general, a lot of people want to be unique, and they go kind of off the rails, in my opinion, about doing something unique and different. But it's not always useful. It's you know, much like a hatchet, if it was built in that regard. And I think with so many people today, society wanting to be unique and that unicorn, people have to be realistic. There's fundamentals still work. Like, you could do all kinds of trick plays in football, but blocking and tackling is still what it's about. Like, don't go too far off that. You know, losing weight is based on calories in and expenditure out and macros. Like, there's some very simple things that always work. And, you know, not to give your product a plug, but products like yours, they feed into that fundamental.
Sure.
Okay, how do we you know, reduce to possession that fundamental need that we're going for, and you make it easier to do the fundamentals. And so that's just in general, people, you could convolute a lot of things, your own personality included. And a lot of times I see people spinning their wheels when they don't really need to. They just need to be better versions of themselves, and all of a sudden their life starts to change. So a lot of times it doesn't take these giant macro changes. Sometimes it does, but a lot of times it's just course corrections and some little things clean up.
Absolutely. Number two is be respectful. This is probably one of my favorites also. I think people forget that they can have a better day and be more positive towards others if they just be fucking nice, man. Just be respectful.
It's not that difficult, right? It's really not that difficult. It shocks me how many I hate to say it, I really in many ways dislike going to the Northeast. Not because I'm from the South. I'm used to people being pretty respectful, and the Northeast is just culturally, typically not that way. Some people, of course, are, but it's seen to be, you know, sorry to you guys live in the Northeast. I'm sure you're some great people, but it's a little bit more okay not to be nice and respectful, and I don't understand that. I don't understand why you would off the rip have a scowl or be anything but nice and respectful. I mean, that other person's going through a day, maybe considerably worse, maybe considerably better than yours, but guess what? You're not going to make either one of your days better by being a dick.
Nope.
Ever. It's never going to help. If you're already in a pissed off mood, being a dick to someone's just going to give you more guilt later because you basically teed off on someone that you shouldn't have, and maybe they're having a terrible day and you just knocked them down a couple more rungs. For what?
I agree.
And so I've learned that early in my life that, you know, be respectful. And my dad and my mom both harped on that heavily. And, you know, as a little boy, I was taught to, you know, shake people's hand firmly, look them straight in the eye, show them respect, show respect for their property, for their space, their time. And it's strange that because of that, things go pretty well. Like, it's weird.
Yep.
The people I've seen that have a high amount of respect for those around them generally have a pretty easy life. Not easy, should I say, but they usually get the breaks, they usually get the connections, they usually get the stuff because you're not a jerk off.
Right.
It's weird. I don't know. The equation is pretty simple for me.
I've got a really quick story and an example that I can use for this this just happened to me the other day.
Sure.
And it happened with the one government organization that I think every American does not like to deal with, and that's the IRS.
Sure.
So I had to do an identity verification. Long story short, but they've been doing this now, and I got randomly selected to have to do this. And I had to go to a local office here in Wilmington to verify my identity. Kind of a pain in the butt, very aggravating when you're busy. So I could have approached that two different ways. I drove down there, and I was aggravated. I had to go down there. Sure, it put me in a bad mood. But I walk in.
You have more important things to do.
Exactly.
Let's move on with our lives.
But I walked in and had to take a number, and I was very agitated. I'm like, I don't have time to do this. Well, yep. I got paired with this little old lady sitting behind the desk, and you could tell when I walked up, she was in a bad mood too. And she kind of had an attitude with me, and I said to myself, you know what, I'm just going to be nice, treat this lady with a lot of respect. And I did. It was yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am. Just gave her everything she wanted. Didn't give her any attitude. Within 5 seconds, her demeanor changed, and I was out of there in less than 5 minutes.
Totally. Yeah. And crazy. She could have totally screwed with her if she wanted to. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, exact same thing. I walk in, if there's a reception, how nice can I be to this person? Can I change their day? And that's exactly what you did. In 5 seconds, you gave her a shining example of what the day could be, and you got what you needed done, and then she got to feel like, hey, you know, maybe the world isn't a bunch of jerks, because everyone that probably walks into that office is pissed off because they're there, right? Let's move past that. We all understand that we don't want to be here, her included. You think that's what she wanted to do in life? I want to work at the IRS office? No, she's not happy about it either. You know? It's interesting. Like, you know, I'm not saying I've gotten out of a lot of tickets, but I've gotten out of a lot of tickets, speeding tickets. And literally, the officer comes over, hi, officer, how are you this evening?
Yep.
Okay, I don't know this guy. It doesn't, but guess what? He's out there protecting and serving. And do you think he wants to chase me down at midnight on a back road somewhere? No. So he's under stress. Hi, officer, how are you doing? Doing great. You know, we do the whole thing. Very nice. If he's going to ticket me, guess what? That's okay, because you know why? I was speeding.
Right.
I was speeding. I can't lie. And then usually it's, oh, Mr. Sorn, you know you're speeding? Yes, absolutely. You know, whatever you need to do is what you need to do, officer. And then it's almost always comes back, hey, slow down a little bit. Yes, sir, please stay safe out there. You know, Mr. Officer, I hope you stay warm tonight. Great. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
It ain't that hard.
Nope.
You know, I'm a big, scary person. At no point has a cop ever pulled a gun on me thinking I was going to do something, because that's not what I'm projecting. I'm projecting respect for who they are and what they're doing. And it's really not that difficult. I don't know. Don't mean to beat a dead horse.
No, oh, yeah.
It's shocking how few people grasp that.
I agree. Number three on your list, and it comes with a quote, and this quote is hands down one of my top three all-time favorite quotes, and I mean this, and I've actually used it. I've put actually last year at our convention.
I don't know what it is. I'm really interested now.
Last year at our convention, we actually put this quote. We took me and Yvonne took our top 10 favorite quotes and put them in. We called it an execution book. It was a tool that we gave franchisees, and throughout the book, we had different random quotes from our favorite quotes and our favorite people. And number three on your list is be valuable. And then underneath it, you had a quote that said, overvaluing yourself will get you frustrated or fired fast. I cannot stress this enough how true this statement is.
It's incredible, right? And it goes from top to bottom. I don't care if you're an employee, a lower level employee. I don't care if you're the president of the company. I don't. From an athletic world, from all the world, it's so you have to take evaluation. And generally, people overvalue themselves.
Yep.
And then what it leads to is frustration. Oh, they're not. And then it leads to that entitlement kind of frustration. They're not paying me enough. They're not doing this. Can you believe what they did to me? Can you believe this? And we here at Sornex, we talk about there's two different types of can you believe. The can you believe that says, like, hey, guys, can you believe that all these things are going to happen to us? Like, can you really believe this? This is awesome. Like, kind of getting people on board. Or there's the, can you believe that so-and-so did that? Can you, and there's the same words, but they have total different effects on the group around you.
Totally.
And so the, can you believe is really, you know, we check people pretty quick. Like, whoa, which direction are you going with this one? And that's that overvaluing. You know, the overvaluing yourself is a lot of times it becomes that, can you believe that they did so and so to me? It's like, whoa, hold on. So frustration. And usually if that's not remedied, unfortunately, people get fired. And then they're caught seemingly flat footed, like, oh, they never told me anything about that. I can't believe they would do that.
Yep.
well, you probably need to go ahead and just kind of drill into that. If things don't feel right, have a conversation. I think I talk about a curious and candid conversation. Curious meaning you ask questions. Candid meaning you actually want the answers. Conversation about where you're going with everything, and you could usually iron some things out. But if you overvalue yourself, you're pretty much just screwed from jump.
Yep.
From what I've seen.
Very impactful quote. Number four is be curious. And yes. I think if I remember correctly, one of the things that you talked about was not being afraid to walk through open doors.
Yes. Open doors. I taught the open door theory, and in many ways I see my life. So just to give some background to the story. So a lot of people say, Bert, wow, you got to do this thing or this other thing. And truthfully, I get on my knees often and thank God for the amount of amazing experiences and people that I have in my life. I believe it's in excess of what I deserve. I don't know why it continues to happen, but I realize it does. I've realized some of the things that generally make that happen, or at least have some sort of correlation or at least coincidence. Do I think I'm fully in control of it? No. Do I think I have a spin on the ball? Yes. And that's what I call the open doors. So there's things, I believe life is like everyone's walking down a hallway and they have a destination of where they're attempting to go, whether it's to be, you know, to make a specific team or to make a certain amount of money or whatever your goal is. That's the door at the end of the hallway. And we're not really sure how long that hallway is. And we're all kind of walking down that, you know, whatever your dreams are at the end of that hallway. Now, what I found was, as I'm walking down that hallway of life, there's doors to the right and left of me, and some of them are closed, some of them are wide open, some of them are cracked. Some of them have a window that I could see inside, but the doors are closed. Some of, you know, and what I've found is, if I'm curious enough to at least poke my head in and look around, that adventures and opportunities are everywhere. And I've talked to some people, some family members and things like that. I go, gosh, you always get to do the coolest stuff. Man, I saw you were in Alaska and you took a private jet up there and you were with this person and you were doing this. And I backtracked that and I went, yeah, how did that happen? Oh, yeah, I got a call from a guy that said, hey, I'm going to Alaska this date through this date. Can you go? So what was that? That was, I was walking down my hallway going somewhere. A friend opens the door beside me to the right of me. This is how I see it in my head, and opens the door wide open and says, would you like to come in this door? And I trust the person. And now, did it make sense to leave for Alaska for a week with about a 1 week notice? No, makes no sense in the world. I'm a president of a company. I got to do X, Y, and Z. But then I also said, I trust the person. Going to Alaska for a week, all expenses paid, is something that I will probably not get again as an offer anytime soon. There's going to be some sort of adventure or something I'm going to learn about life or learn. I will be better when I come back. So I said, let me check with the wife. Pretty sure I could go. Of course, she said yes because she knows how my heart is for adventure. And I went. And my life changed in many ways on that trip. Now, that's just one trip of and one thing of many, many times my life has taken these hard rights and hard lefts. That end goal is still kind of out there, but I've realized the process of life I enjoy much more because I say yes to a lot of things. Now, do I have to audit some things? Sure. But I walk through a lot of those open doors, many of them that seem either like they'd be a lot of work or that they seem kind of crazy or they seem kind of out of character. But those are the ones that usually I move the needle in my life the furthest because they have the most impactful effect on my life. So open doors, that's how I see open doors. I don't think people walk through doors enough, but what you'll find out is the more doors you walk through, the more doors open. Sure. And after a while, you have options. You have to start saying no to options because there's so many options that you get afforded to you that the blessings literally come in faster than you could scramble them up and hold on to them. And then you just kind of go, okay, this is crazy. I have all these amazing options to do it. Now I have to start culling the ones that I can, which almost kind of goes against the open door theory. But at some point you have to go to sleep. You have to see your family. You have to take care of yourself. But what I believe the catalyst of that was starting to walk through open doors. And one of the biggest doors I walked through was 1994 when I walked to the University of South Carolina's weight room to work out that day. And through a Forrest Gump series of events, basically got inadvertently invited to walk onto the South Carolina track team. And I wasn't prepared, nor was I recruited, nor was I to the level of anything. But I walked through that open door and I showed up the next day at 2 o'clock. And 5 years later, I was SEC record holder and team captain and four-time All-American. And that totally changed my life, my athletic life. It set myself up for running Soarnex one day, and just literally my whole life changed that one day that I walked through that seemingly insignificant open door. But had I not seen the door and said, oh no, I got stuff to do tomorrow, no, I'm not going to show up to a random practice at 2 p.m. tomorrow, that's crazy, like probably most people would do, I don't even know where my life would be right now. So my life and successes have generally been by a series of open doors.
Nice.
And that's a little bit more meat behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. Number five is be capable.
Yes, be capable. Capability. Pretty is simple. Something that so many people overlook. Yeah. You got to be good at something.
Right.
You know, we kind of joke about it here, like, hey, man, it's called a job. And a job means something that you're paid for, but it's also something that you're not going to want to do it every day. That's called sitting on your butt at home or play. There's work and there's play, and you could enjoy your work. But at some point, someone else said, I don't feel like doing this, or I can't do this, or I don't have the capacity to do this, so I have to hire someone who can. So you have to realize that you have to be capable to bring that value add. And I think whether that's certification, whether that is experience, but you know, a lot of people just know a lot of people, or they know kind of a cursory output of a topic, but really the more capable you could become and more deep water, you know, I always think of like the Star Wars reference to Yoda living in the Dagobah forest way out there, Dagobah swamp, whatever it is. And he's a little green dude and he's probably not good at anything but what he's good at, yeah. You know, but if you're going to go get Jedi training, you're going to the little green guy. You're not going to this other dude, this big, you know. And then so I see it that's like as deep water as you get. Right. But he was super valuable from that perspective. So I choose to find people that I see that live in that Dagobah swamp. And like, okay, if I want to learn how to Olympic weightlift or diet or supplementation or shoot a bow, I'm going to go find that deep water person because they're the most capable. Sure. If I could learn 10% of what they learn from the most capable person on the planet, that's significantly more than learning 10% from someone who's a jabroni.
Absolutely. The next one on your list is be there. And I think the lesson that you're trying to show here is, and it's the analogy that I used as I was listening to you go through this, is don't be the guy that's always taking and not giving back.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You have to be there for your group. You have to be there for the world. I mean, you have to be. That's part about being valuable, right? You know, and I think Derek Woodsky, if you're not following Woodsky, you're crazy. I think he put something, what did it say the other day? It says, don't just show up for the pictures.
Right.
And it's just like, that's so brilliant. And that's just that's I think one that we'll talk about in the future is being present. And you see so much like on a social media or whatever, like a convention, people walk by and go, oh, that person's famous, let me get a picture real quick.
Yep.
And they'll get a picture and they go, thanks, and they'll walk off. And you're like, okay, you just happened to share a 3-foot circle with that person in space and time. There was no real connection. There was no transfer of information. There was no value proposition either direction. You just wanted to say that you were standing next to someone who happened to be known. In my opinion, that's a pretty weak move. You know, if you're going to do it, dive in, ask the questions, and if you could really get to the next level, do something valuable enough where that person says, well, I want to talk to you because maybe you ask really good questions, or maybe you're very supportive or whatever. And that goes back to being relevant, which is really the whole basis of being legendary.
Well, it's a perfect segue into the very next one. You just said it is be present. And, you know, it's kind of a funny little joke that Yvonne and I say to each other all the time when we're at home spending time together, and one of us will catch the other one on our phones when we're in the middle of a conversation, or and we'll stop and joke and say,
that
hey,
never happens to the sword in the soul,
be present, be present.
Be present, that's exactly, oh yeah, you could probably text me every day that to remind me, and that would be not a ill-fitting text. Yeah, we've kind of joked about, you know, you go out to like a bar or grill or something, and you look and there's a table of eight people and everyone's on their phone. Like, we used to joke, we go, hey, where do you want to go look at our phones tonight?
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because does it take up a lot of time? Sure. But you never get real connections with people unless you're present with them. And I struggle that all the time. I think one of the biggest things, I think why I wrote that was, I do have a difficulty being present because being a leader and a, you know, CEO and a planner and a visionary, that's great, but you're always future focused. If you're building something, you're almost always future focused because you have this plan and where this vision, where it wants to go, which is awesome. But I think I attribute it to, I do a lot of, you know, hunting and fishing. So I'm in the woods a lot during the dark hours. So when you walk in through the woods with a flashlight, you don't hold the flashlight directly at your feet. You hold it like 10 feet in front of you to see what's coming. So right. Then your body could balance and your step cadence and things. So you could walk over something. You don't just hold it straight down. So that's not how you, so you're always that future focused. You're always planning. Your body is doing those micro processing to plan how it's going to navigate these woods. And that's how I think of my life. I'm always 10 feet ahead of where I am. And then just as you're walking through the woods in the dark, if you notice, you shine the light 10 feet ahead of you. But if you see that stick, when your body gets to the stick, you've already microprocessed how to step over the stick. You don't have to follow the flashlight right to your feet to make sure you walk over it. Your body already knows what to do. It's already manifesting that movement. And that's where I feel that a lot of my life is, because I'm planning so much that by the time I get to the doing, I've already done it 100 times in my head. So I've already kind of ridden the emotional ride of doing it before it was actually ever done, because I've envisioned it so many times. I've already worked all the risk rewards. I've already worked all the math out. And then it's just a manifestation of physically doing it, which generally I'm not very present for. I'm already still looking forward to the next thing.
Sure.
Unfortunately, that doesn't work well with families so, or friends. And that's where I have to remember, hey, you know, don't think about what, you know, I'm talking to my wife in the kitchen. Don't think about what we're going to do 10 minutes from now and be planning that. Think about the words that are coming out of her mouth right now, in order to be present, because if you could be present with someone, you could build a real lasting, deep relationship. And I like my wife. I want to be married to her for a really, really long time. And I want to make sure that we continue to like each other. And I think that only works if you're developing a relationship constantly. But one of my biggest things that I have to remind myself is to be present. And I think if more people looked at it that way, that you're literally eroding the connection points by not being present, they would maybe see it as a more detrimental thing or just a whoops, you know.
I know for me, one of the things that I struggle with sitting in the seat that I sit in with our company is I've always kind of made it a point to, we say be present and be available for franchisees. And, you know, I've always told everybody 99.9, I think, except for like literally the last ones we just signed last week, they all have my cell phone number, every one of them.
Right.
And that's awesome. I've made it a point to make it that way on purpose. And, you know, I have some people that are close to me that are like, why do you do that? Why do you give them your personal cell number? They're just going to beat you up and always want to take up your time. And that means a lot to me. I always want, I don't care if we get to 5,000 units. I want, right. You know, that connection with everybody. But I know I don't know if you've ever experienced this or if you deal with this in your line of work, but you know, it's hard. It gets harder and harder the bigger that we get to actually be present for some of these guys that want to call me and talk to me and go around our operations people and just come straight to me because they're so used to that.
Oh, it's a hard, you're exactly right. It's a hard business model, and I honestly haven't figured out how to fully navigate that because, true, we're growing also, and that means I have more clients throughout there. And how we built it was everyone had my cell phone number. My cell phone was on the internet all the time, like all my sign offs. I mean, anybody could get a hold of me back in the day. And, you know, and so people just calling me left and right. And then, but that's how it's always been. University of San Jose, I haven't talked to in years. Great. You still got my number? Call me. Let's chat. And if it turns out to be an hour, then, you know, there's the business side of me that goes, well, 1/10 or 1/12 of my day, that's what I spent it on today. So it, at a point, you know, unfortunately, I've had to start insulating myself just purely because I can't get stuff done if not. Right. And that's a really hard one. I hate even saying it out loud because I'm not trying to say anyone is less important, but the ship doesn't keep rolling if I'm in 10 one-hour conversations with people every day. Acutely it will, but long term I have no time to have vision or anything like that. So sometimes I try to go black. I try to go dark for a couple hours and then just batch my big projects or things I have to dial into. You know, it's the old, hey, you know, I'm not taking any calls right now. Hate to say it, I've had to go to that at times or find great people around me to somewhat insulate me. They could handle the various minutia of stuff that occurs. And I have to put them in a valuable position because at some point the volume is just going to be too great. And, you know, a good friend of mine, you know, Zach Brown, the singer, and he's like, at some point I just can't shake everyone's hand.
Yep.
You know, there's 30,000 people in the stand. I just can't do it. Do I want to? Yeah, but that will take 10 hours. I have to go see my family. Like, yeah. You go, okay, I get it. Now, neither one of us are rock stars, but the same problem exists. And it's honestly just a part of it, it's an unfortunate growing pain of success that has to be navigated. And if you figure out how to do it in a perfect balance, you know, hit me up. Let me know how that shakes out.
Number eight is be prepared. And it also has one little cliff note under it that I think has always stuck out to me too when I look at this. And it's grinding is an intermediate skill set.
Yeah.
I've learned that one the hard way.
Right? It's very easy to go down that rabbit hole. And because when you're starting, grinding is what makes you different, right? That's your ability to take stress and to keep going and to keep going and to keep going. Like that's how you break away from the pack. That's the startup. That's all of that. But what I've come to realize the last few years is I don't want to use the term power because that just sounds, but if you're a leader or you're someone who's honestly calling shots, if you're grinding all the time, we used to call it heads down welding. You know, some of our best welders in the shop, these guys, we just like, he's a heads down welder. Like he had, I mean, there's a bead rolling almost constantly.
Sure.
You know, his mask is on, he's smashing it. But guess what that guy's not doing? He's not calling any shots. He's not directing other people. He's not mentoring other people. He's not leading. He's not planning. So you can't, and we've made that mistake. You take your best welder in the shop. Oh, wow. He's the welding manager. He's great. No, he's a heads down welder. That guy's a machine. So he's a grinder. He's not a leader. And so by putting a person like that into a leadership position, if they don't have the ability to realize that grinding is an intermediate level skill set, they're going to get frustrated and potentially fired. And unfortunately, yep. you can promote yourself or you could promote people to a position of incompetence.
Yep. That's what I meant by I've learned that the hard way. We've done that. We've done that here.
Totally. And you feel so bad. You're like, gosh, why didn't I see that? Like, but yeah, so, you know, you look at like a king or a judge or someone, they always retire back to their chambers. What are they doing? They're thinking, they're planning. They're having to go through every possibility. Where would this rabbit hole go? Where would this rabbit hole go? And then that's what they're paid for. That's why that level of pay is associated with a different skill set than just grinding. And I think when people always talk about that grind, great, now what? Graduate from that if you really want to be a leader, you know, a shot caller or whatever they call it.
Sure, agreed. Number nine is be convinced. And I remember the presentation very, very clearly. And I think the point that you were trying to make to this, and I think you'll explain it here, is you say realizing everyone won't get it. If what you're doing is extraordinary, most won't.
Yes. Yes. We were having this conversation yesterday. That's a hard one, because I enjoy watching people smile. I enjoy watching people get it. And I take it personally if they don't. And so at times, whether it be the industry, whether it be clients, whether it be employees, I've kind of had to realize that if you're truly doing something extraordinary, and that's if you are cutting edge, and that's what we used to talk about all the time. We would come out with a cutting edge piece of equipment, and the industry uses that term a lot. All industries do. This is cutting edge. This is cutting edge. And then I would get a response maybe from a client that would say, well, what's the science to back this up? And I would retort, I said, well, if you're truly cutting edge, you are the science.
Yep.
And you are the data. And there's a hypothesis, but there's not a conclusion yet. You are literally running the experiment if you're truly cutting edge. So, but what goes with that is by definition, if you're extraordinary or doing something extraordinary, you are doing something extraordinary that most people won't get, just by definition. So that's the difficult part, is when your sights are set on cutting edge and extraordinary, whether they be designs or application or branding or business model, expect most people not to get it. And that's hard for me, because I'm a people pleaser at times, because I like seeing people get it. I want them to go on that ride with me. I want them to see and go, aha, like my favorite part about Zornex is seeing my customers go, aha, I love it. And that's like what just I get off on. I love that. Unfortunately, if you're too far out ahead of everybody, you're not going to get a lot of people to get it.
Right.
And then you have to decide, is this too soon? Is this still worth doubling down on and realizing I have to create education to go with this? Or do I have to get some really smart people or people that maybe see this and audit this whole thing? And so, but the times I've been convinced generally paid off big, and the times that I let those around me convince me otherwise, we've left things on the table that 2 and 3 and 4 years later another company comes out with, I go, crap, I knew it worked. I knew it would have worked. No one around me saw it. And I just go, dang it, I just got to be convinced. If I know it, I know it. And that doesn't mean that I'm special. It doesn't mean I'm a soothsayer. It doesn't mean anything like that. But just some things you know. You know in your gut.
Sure.
And you got to go with that. And so
we've had to do that here many times.
You've had to do right. And there's certain things you go, this doesn't make sense, but it makes sense. And then you built a great business model off of it, right?
Yep.
And that's how you – what they call disruptive technology. That's what changes an industry. If you go off of what has always worked, just the history of stuff, it's not going to be extraordinary. It's not going to be disruptive, and it's not going to change the world.
We lived through it, man. I mean, we started a meal plan company in central Illinois 15 years ago when there wasn't any Facebook or Instagram, and people thought we were crazy.
Right. Yeah, I've been to your house. I would say it worked out. You know, but you're exactly right. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, he started a weightlifting equipment company that did free weights in the middle of the Nautilus era,
sure,
of the early 80s out of a garage.
Pissing Arthur Jones off.
Pissing Arthur Jones off, pissing everybody off. Well, I would say they didn't even piss him off, because they didn't know he existed for years. That's the crazy part, because it's like you're just going at it and you're believing. We were so convinced that this is the way that equipment needed to be made and this is what training actually needed to be. You know, Dad was preaching it from the rooftops forever.
Sure.
And, you know, everyone was like, no, you got to do this. He's like, wrong. You know, and then 15 years later, you know, the pendulum swings in this direction. And it's like, oh, okay, you guys weren't crazy. So anyway, it's interesting. But if you're not convinced and you're not passionate, and if you don't fully – you got to be all in. If you're not all in, it's like, okay, go work for somebody else. Go take a paycheck. It's fine. No problem. Hit your 40, 50 hours a week and then go do whatever you're going to do in life. And we have to have a lot of those people in the world to make the world go round.
Yep.
But the people who change the world through disruptive technology or application are not those people.
Agreed. The last one is be persistent.
Yep. Yep. I would say if anything soreness has been is persistent.
That's where a lot of people fail, actually.
Oh, sure. Sure, because it makes so much sense not to be. Yeah, and that's a grind in some ways. But it's really just being convinced and just keeping taking cuts of the ball, you know, and sure. Doing it sometimes when it doesn't make any sense to continue. And then there's been so many times that we should have rolled up the tent and did something else. I mean, so many times that I've had CEO groups, I've had banks, I've had all these other people go, well, you know what we would do now. And then they're convincing me, I'm trying to convince me of this. And, you know, partly just, you know, I don't know if it's ignorance or delusion. I do believe it to be a good leader in some ways, you almost have to be delusional. You have to just believe it so much. And then eventually other people will start believing it too.
I agree. You know? I agree 100%.
It's crazy. You know, when they had like that, I think there's a story of I'll probably butcher it a bit, but there's a story of this donkey that, you know, fell down this hole and he's trying to get out and can't get out. And these other animals come around and they're like, they're looking, they're like, gosh, you know, he's struggling so much. And he's pulling, trying to climb out. And keeps falling back in and they keep yelling at him, telling him like, hey man, just give up. Just like, you're going to wear yourself out. Just, you know, like all this, just stop. And, you know, they're crying. This is terrible. And we're watching you kill yourself doing this. And he finally struggles. And by struggling so much on the walls of the dirt, he knocks the dirt down, which raises the bottom level of the dirt. And he's eventually able to walk out. The walls literally turn into the floor. And later they're like, well, how did, you know, why did you keep going? And he was like, I'm deaf. I thought you were cheering for me. And it was, you know, I butchered it a little bit, but I love the story. It's like, oh, if you think everyone's for you, it's only mindset.
Yep.
So if you just keep thinking, I'm doing a good job, eventually your walls will turn into your floor. And then it just works. And then, you know, we've been around 40 years and I kind of, you know, I keep daring to write a book, you know, how do you create an overnight success, you know, world-class brand in 40 short years, you know, and it's there's no fast track to it. Mm-mm. And it's always going to take more than you think. It's always going to take more time, more money, more effort, more passion, more sleepless nights, more ulcers, more every good and bad thing that you could think of. And you know that. It's always going to take more than that. And that's why most people can't hack it.
Absolutely, man. That was very well said.
But obviously your people seem like they're hacking it because you guys are crushing it. Your franchisees seem to be bowing down on it, so I don't know. You got something figured out over there.
We're very blessed. We're doing very well. I have a lot of gratitude for that. So,
thank you, man.
At the end of the presentation here, you've got legendary hacks, and you've got four of them listed here. Do you remember what those were?
You could tell me about them. I remember a few of them.
The first one is try epic stuff.
Yes.
Number two is tell great stories. Number three is walk through open doors. And number four is my favorite. You can't just decide to have culture.
Yeah. Well, I'll unpack it. I mean, I already kind of talked about the open doors. The culture piece is you have to live it. You don't decide you have culture. The culture decides if you are who they're going to follow or they're going to – you bleed out. You don't necessarily bleed in.
Correct.
You know, it's like – and that's something that – you know, thankfully people have said, wow, gosh, Sornix has such a great culture and good. But I've seen other companies try to create a culture and you can try to create it, but you just have to live it first.
It's going to show.
It's going to show. It's like building a relationship with someone. You can't just call them to go, I want to be your best friend. Are we best friends now?
Right.
No. Be there for them for like, I don't know, a decade. You know,
yeah.
And have great things that you trade back and forth. And one day you go, hey, man, I think that guy's like my best friend. Like that dude's rad. Like I'm really down with it. You can't just decide.
Right.
Try epic stuff. you know, that's kind of goes into, you know, dare mighty things. You know, if the world has a line, an imaginary line of what they consider mediocrity or average or good enough, I want to keep as many of my facets above that line as possible. And a few of them that I'm really passionate about, I want to go ham on. And I want to, I mean, and if they're epic and it's crazy and it's above everything that should work, that's the stuff I'm setting my sights on. Because regardless, if you screw it up, you have a great story.
Sure.
You come out of the other end of it. And I believe part of that being relevant is being able to tell a great story means, can you convey that information to someone to make them feel something? You know, I've taught so many people how to weightlift or do Highland Games. I was a Highland Games athlete, a thrower. I've taught people how to hunt and shoot bows and rifles and all this other stuff. It's only because I'm super passionate about it and I went super deep water and I'm a good storyteller. So then I could take that piece and go, hey, here's my experience I had with this. I think you would also enjoy this experience. I'm going to lay out to you in your mind this whole potential fantasy that could occur if you decide to go down this trail. And then I'm going to leave it to you. Are you going to decide to go down this trail? Yes or no. It's fine either way. But I'm just saying there's some really great stuff here. And that's what I mean by telling a great story. But what you generally can do is you can impact a lot of people's lives. And from a sales perspective, you could sell people on what would be an amazing opportunity or what would be an amazing life-changing turn for them, for the good of them. And so those two things, you put them together, epic stuff, tell good stories, you could get by with just those two things for a long time.
Sure.
So
good stuff, man.
I remember most of my presentation from a couple of years ago.
Nice. No, this is probably, I mean, this is awesome. Like I said, I still pull this out probably once or twice a month when I run across it, and I'll just pull it out and just flip through it, and it just kind of, you know, if I'm dealing with a lot of shit that day, it'll bring me back down to zero. It's done that before, so.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That means so much. I really appreciate that. Thanks for saying that, because that means, well, what you basically just said is that I'm relevant, and that's the whole point of wanting to, is the legendary lifestyle. How do you lead an impactful life that impacts people? So thank you for blessing me with that word, because I've won today now. Thanks, man.
I mean, yeah, no problem. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, again, thank you for the time. And
of course.
Do you want to talk about the sort? And you guys just started a podcast. Well, actually, you did it a couple of months ago, and it's really, really good. I listen to it all the time.
Hey, thanks.
If you want to talk about the Be Legendary podcast.
We have the Be Legendary podcast. So we talk about topics like this with different people that we run across, whether they be business associates, just cool people that we meet, something that we find value in there that we go, gosh, I'd like to share this with the rest of the world. So that's what it's about. It's pretty entertaining. It's sometimes it's Brandon Lilly as a host. Sometimes it's me. Sometimes it's Dan McKim. Who knows? Who knows the direction it's going to go? It's pretty loose. It's more, hey, I found this great person. I want my other friends to know about this great person.
Brandon's a good guy, man. And I actually had him on here, and he did an interview with me, and the guy can talk very well. Like, and I don't mean like he can talk a lot. I mean, when he talks, you can't help but listen. Like, I think that podcast, I might have spoke 15 words, and it was just very good content. You know, like the things that he was saying were very good.
Wow, it's Brandon has some great weight to his words. I read, I was on a podcast the other day, and the host said, so we were talking about parenting. He said, raise the level of your words, not the level of your voice.
Sure.
I was like, oh, that's good. I mean, that's good, whether it's a parenting situation or you know, I used to say, let the world feel your weight. And to just, if you're going to be all in and stand for something and hold fast. And, you know, don't just blow like the wind, whichever way, you know, it blows. And I think if you do that, you'll lead a normal life for sure.
Absolutely. Well, man, I think we can wrap it up there. That was awesome. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy. And
you as well. Thank you for having me on the show, man. That means a lot.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All righty. Well, we're going to end it there, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. And Bert, how do they find you on social media? Is it just at Bert Zorin?
Bert Zorin, BERTSORIN, my name. I'm not on Twitter a whole lot. I'm on Insta pretty good bit. Facebook, you can check out ZorinX.com. And, yeah, that's kind of it.
Awesome.
Google me, figure out some weird picture of me on there, and find me if you need to.
All right, guys. Till next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bert.
Yes, sir.
Well, there you have it. That's our two cents, and that's our clean truth. For more information on Clean Eats, visit www.cleaneats.com. To find Yvonne and I on social media, on Instagram, I'm Don_Verady, V-A-R-A-D-Y. To find Yvonne, it's just Yvonne Verady, all lowercase. Thank you. Have a great day, guys.